Coming up on Golf Today, the world number one Nelly Korda tees off in moments at the LPGA season opener in Florida. We'll take you there to watch Nelly warm up as she kicks off 2022. And a former world number one, Rory McIlroy, had his debut round in the Middle East, and it was just okay. We talk Rory and hear from Rory on his goals this year. And they call him Coach. Tony Dungy, Super Bowl champ, part of the NBC family, hops on to talk timeless Tom Brady and creating a culture of winning, whether on the gridiron or the tee box. Hut one, hut two, hike, it's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
It is Golf Today. We typically come out to the desk at this time, but when the number one ranked player in the world is on the driving range getting set to start her 2022, we go to Nelly Korda.
Yeah, and why not? The world number one, 5 worldwide wins last year, including the Olympic gold medal, said one of the big decisions she's having to make is whether to display the medal, you know, put it in a nice case, but she likes to take it around, took it to Prague, her grandparents got to wear it, so she's still not sure what to do with her Olympic gold medal.
Matt Kuchar famously carried the bronze medal in a sock in his backpack for years.
That's right.
And would show it off to people that asked. People want to see this. I mean, if you look around social media with Xander.
Yes.
How many times have you seen Xander posing with the gold medal? This is a really, really cool thing to have, especially in the golf space.
And it was a really, really big year for Nelly. She said earlier this week she is hungrier for more, knows there are expectations. Let's see where the year goes. You have to think it's going to be bountiful. Again, she handled being the best player in the world, I think, with aplomb. Maybe ran out of gas a little bit at the end of the season, but she is hungry, she is fit, and she is ready.
Yeah, you think so much about Nelly Korda and somebody that pushes her and Jessica Korda. I think the most important person in women's golf for Nelly Korda is Jin-Young Ko. I think having Jin-Young Ko there, considering the way she finished her season, win after win after win, and really pushing Nelly to find something late in her season as well. The Jin-Young Ko, Nelly Korda show is what we're looking forward to as much as anything in 2022.
Mere decimal points separate them from atop the Rolex World Rankings. Should have looked very far for other players that might push them. Big Lydia Ko, Patty Tavitanikit from UCLA, Yuka Saso, Nasa Hataoka. Tremendous talent atop the world of golf on the ladies' side.
So you got to watch your shadow. And you got the number one player in the world hitting range balls.
Could be a rookie,
that
maybe.
Shadow
doesn't
out
doesn't
there.
Know what she's doing. Who knows what's out
know
there,
she's
right?
Warming up. It's warming up. You don't want no shadow as you're trying to get set to start your season, Shane Bacon and Damon Hack. I said this when we were talking about Nelly Korda this week. She finished in the top 14 in driving, iron play, and putting. There was not a player on the PGA Tour that finished in the top 14 in those statistical categories. This is a next-level player that kind of has all the tools you're hoping to have.
We talk about players that you would stop to watch on the range across the game of golf, whether you're talking about Adam Scott on the men's side. I think Nelly Korda fits that as well. The description, very tall, long levers, hits the ball a long way, incredibly accurate, fantastic wedge player, putts like a dream as well. I don't find any weakness in her game, and the stats bear that out as well.
So early in the morning, late in the afternoon, you got to watch those shadows, D. You got to watch the long shadows. It gets right in your line when you're trying to putt, could potentially sneak into the tee box. Make sure you're watching those shadows.
I prefer the evening shadows, by the way. Chasing the sunset versus chasing the sun in the morning.
Get into some golf this week. The Rolex Series returns as the DP World Tour is back. Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. Got some highlights. Rory McIlroy, a couple under here at the 18th. A different golf course than what we'd seen in the past. And that one was left of left of left.
Wow, 4 runner-up finishes on the other course. That was not good from Rory. So he'd shoot even par 72, kind of an opening round.
Saw a left miss from Rory. This is the right miss from the best iron player on this here planet, Colin Morikawa. Par 3, 8th. Finds the water. But have to go re-tee. Kind of looking around there. He would make a double bogey there at the 8th. He would shoot one over par.
Wait, what's going on here? I thought these were called highlights.
We'll get to it.
Okay,
here we go.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Okay.
We got highlights now.
Finally.
Takumi Kanaya, par 4, 6th. Watch out for this guy, man. Already 53rd in the world. Does stuff like this to tucked flags. That is a no-go flag.
Oh,
and he makes it.
That's what you want. Love the club twirl, by
right,
the way.
Right rough to a right flag.
Oh. How about a little 6
under 6? Who takes that on?
6. How about an Open champion, Shane Lowry?
You know, he found a little form late in the season last year.
He did, and I think the Ryder Cup, you know, we look at him in a different way. He was very emotional, even in defeat, about what it meant to be a part of that group of men.
You can always do the hat off bow, by the way. That always plays, no matter the tour, no matter the age.
Greg Norman used to do that back in the day. Here's Tyrrell Hatton on the par 4 14th. It's a close make. Birdie, he shot 66 as well, maybe popping the thumb early in 2022, perhaps.
Ian Poulter as well at the par 4 6 in their close.
Just love
so much
look.
Opportunity, right, early in the season?
I love the look on his face. He always just looks a little disturbed, a little angry. There's a little chip on his shoulder, former assistant pro who found his way to the big stage.
All right, my guy I'm looking at in 2022, the guy I think will eventually be world number one, Victor Hovland, here at the 8th hole high. No surprise there considering the ball strike, and that would be one of 9 birdies on his day. You don't have to be a math major to understand that's half the hole, Steve.
Tell you what, I think some sports psychologists should take a page from Victor Hovland, how he handles himself. How about Scott Jamieson from Glasgow? Winner on the European Tour with a sweep. 9 under 63 to lead them all.
No bogeys on the card. That is a stacked leaderboard. A bit surprising with Rory McIlroy and Colin Morikawa not playing great to start their 2022 on the DP World Tour. You see some of those late bogeys from Rory McIlroy, even par 72. That was surprising. But Rory McIlroy a day ago talked about his goals for 2022.
You know, I used to sit down on the flight here and write down, like, I want to win 5 times. I want to win a major. I want to win the race to Dubai or the FedEx Cup. I want to do this or that. And of course, I want to do all those things. I'd love to win 6 times in a season. I've never done that before. I've won 5. And all those things are great goals, and they're things to try to work towards. But I think the biggest thing for guys that at the level that we're at is it's, you know, I want to hit over 60% of my fairways. I want my proximity inside 150 yards to be a certain number. I want my strokes gained putting to be a certain number. I think having goals that are more objective and more that I'm in control of. So I can't control if I win 5 or 6 times a year. I mean, you know, there's so many other variables in there.
And you hear Rory McIlroy kind of lay out these new goals for 2022, and they're really stat-based. Just to kind of look at what he was talking about, you know, around 60% driving accuracy. See, last season, 145th on the PGA Tour, just under that number. Strokes gained approach, just under that kind of half a shot on the field, 35th. He did that in 2012. He picked up a full shot on the PGA Tour. That's his best season to date. Proximity from 125 to 150 yards, you see. Right, and, you know, a fairly solid statistical category there as well. And then, of course, Rory always battling to improve the putting.
Yeah, I think these are goals that Rory is setting. They're almost more mastery goals versus goals that are tangible. I want to win a green jacket, which obviously he wants to do. I want to win a major championship. But I think that's probably instructive in kind of saying, listen, I want to get better as a golfer, hit more fairways, hit more greens, make more putts. And if those things happen, the other things will take care of themselves. What's fascinating to me is he has these two twin monsters that are staring him in the face, complete the career Grand Slam and winning that Masters and getting off the schneid of not winning major championships.
Right.
So he's come at new seasons and come at these goals in different ways throughout his career.
Yeah, when you think about New Year's resolution, something most people do each and every year, and you think about the full year, it's really when you kind of minimize those things and you try to find a way to make it smaller, right? What I see from Rory McIlroy with some of these comments is these are goals that you can check off every single day.
Right.
Every day you can go to the golf course and go, I'm just trying to hit 60% of the fairways. I'm just trying to pick up strokes on the field with my iron play. I'm trying to improve the putting. All of a sudden, these things feel attainable for Rory McIlroy. Think about golf. Think about trying to win a golf tournament. Can't win it on Thursday, can't win it on Friday, can't win it on Saturday. You can put yourself in a position to win, but all that comes just one of the 4 days. When you think about winning a major championship, they happen later in the season, right? I mean, you've got to wait 3.5, 4 months for the first major, and then all of a sudden you get into the PGA, US Open, Open Championship. All of a sudden, those 4 weeks feel bigger. To me, this just looks like a guy that, first of all, is one of the smartest people in professional sport, not just professional golf, looking at day-to-day. These are day-to-day attainable goals for Rory McIlroy that he can look at and then at the end of the day go, I'm happy the way I played. Look what I did. I did what I'm trying to do.
He's so thoughtful, and in some ways it could be to his detriment. It's great for us in the media because he shares his thoughts, but he's come at this in different ways. When you think back to Jack Nicklaus, you know, you start every year by going to his coach, Jack Grout, teach me how to play golf. And it was breaking down the fundamentals, you know, grip, stance, you know, all of the basic things. And now life is more complicated, especially for Rory McIlroy, who I think has come at seasons in different ways. Going back to 2015, after he had that great year of 2014, let's kind of go back and forth to some of these quotes that he's had through the years. 2015, this is Rory McIlroy. Every year I'm flying here to the Middle East. I do a week of prep or 10 days of prep in Dubai before this tournament, and I write my goals down in the back of my boarding pass, as he explained. I put it in my wallet. I memorize them, but I don't look at them until the end of the year.
Yeah, you're writing those goals down. All of a sudden, again, kind of going back to what we said, these are year-long goals. If you have a good week, that's not meeting your goals. You can have a good week with the goals that Rory has for 2022 and be happy and content with what you've been able to do. You accomplish what you're looking to accomplish.
Yeah, but his goals have changed. They've evolved.
Always.
2016, so a lot of the goals are about preparation and about doing as much as I possibly can so that when I turn up to events, I'm ready to go. I don't have to think about anything. I know that I'm as well prepared as I can be.
A lot of talk about prep. A lot of talk about being prepared for golf tournaments. Let me tell you something right now. I know it was 2016. Rory McIlroy is prepared for every golf tournament.
Absolutely.
He shows up at. The guy is working on his golf game. He doesn't talk about it. He didn't post every swing on social media. But he's working. We know the prep is there.
But he's also kind of not changing, but he's evolving a little bit and maybe altering his view. This is from 2018, before the start of the year. I think I'm looking back on it. I'm going to try to get to golf tournaments a little bit earlier again. Try to get in on a Monday. And it just gives you an extra day to prepare on the course, get used to green speeds, rough lengths, firmness of everything, all that different stuff. Because each week, obviously, the golf course changes quite a bit. So he was saying, you know, I was starting to arrive to golf tournaments on Tuesday.
And now changing his prep.
And now changing his prep.
I'm going to
come back on Monday. So he's thinking about this. This is already on his mind. How about 20? This is 2019. My focus has always been on the biggest events in the world since I got into the top 50, but then even more so now because wanting to travel less, want to spend more time at home. He talked about purchasing a house, and this is starting the year in Maui. He said he wasn't going to go back to the Middle East anymore. Going to start his season, focus on the PGA Tour. Where is he right now? He's in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So we're seeing some, a little bit of shifting sand, pardon the pun, in terms of how he's approaching these years.
Rory McIlroy is a guy that will always let us in. He always lets us in exactly what he's thinking and how he's going about his business. That's been one of the great things about covering Rory McIlroy. But when you read those quotes, and this was you pulling these out, D, this was really, really smart of kind of going back throughout the years in which Rory would start the season with a new idea.
Yeah.
For Rory, I think he's always looking for these things because he's always reading stuff and he's talking to people and he's so interested in the way other athletes approach things. And what have you changed? What have you tinkered with? What is it? Is it diet? Is it prep? Is it arrival time? Is it getting to games earlier, getting to the stadium early? It just, to me, Rory is a guy that is going to always be like this. I look at what we've put through in 15 and 17 and 18 and 19, and I like 2022 Rory the most in terms of prep because, again, I look at a guy that can attain goals daily.
He's not the kid, you know, with the boarding pass anymore, though.
Right.
He's the man with a zillion dollars now. He is the man with a family. You know, who else in sports? Can you think of anyone that right now who's already so accomplished and so great but has this tantalizing thing that is being talked about? I mean, this is all that we talk about with Rory. It's majors and the Masters.
Right.
Anybody else is this? I mean, John Elway, you know, won two Super Bowls his last 2 years. You know, we looked at this guy who had the zillion-dollar arm and looked so great coming out of Stanford and turned down baseball to play football. I'm just trying to see who in sports is already so great and so accomplished and will be a Hall of Famer, but has this giant carrot that is so hard to attain. That's all everybody is talking about.
You know, I'm a big basketball fan. The names that come to my mind are James Harden and Russell Westbrook. These are two players that have won MVPs in the NBA. These are two players that obviously have a ton of talent, and we're always talking about winning and championships and being on championships team and playing like a championship player. Rory McIlroy has won major championships, but D, it's a long, long time ago. 2014 was a long time ago. I love what Rory said about, you know, his goals and what he wants to do late last year. You know, I win everything else. I won the Players. I won the FedEx Cup. I won everything else except major championships. These are the same fields at the majors. I just haven't got hot those 4 days. The question there is, Is something different in your prep going into the majors versus everything else? Because at times Rory shows up to golf courses and you can see at the moment he steps on the ground, he's got it this week. The confidence is there. That Rory bounce that we love to watch is there. And then sometimes at the majors, it doesn't seem to be.
He remains one of the most compelling figures, I think, across sports, not just in
golf.
Cannot wait to see what he has in store for 2022. All right, much more ahead. This Thursday edition of Golf Today. We got Nelly, we got Jessica, we got Cordas in oodles, in bunches out in Florida. Getting ready for round one. We're back in a bit.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life.
Back on Golf Today, a little throwback. Thursday, Jessica Korda, a year ago, four seasons around, about a 35-minute drive across 417.
Is that a road? That's a road?
It's a road. Nona, you go from Nona
how many
to
lanes?
Four seasons and back. Many lanes.
Oh, okay. So serious.
Yes. Gotcha. Yes. How about a 25-foot birdie putt in the playoff to beat Danielle King after shooting 60 on Saturday? You know, her parents were there. Nelly was there. A lot of hugs. First start of the season, Shane, has been good for Jessica.
Yes. Four total wins, two runner-up finishes. You see the earnings. Her worst finish is a tie for 21st. Three top three finishes in her first seven starts last season, including that win.
And for more on Jessica Korda, we welcome in Amy Rogers from Lake Nona. Good morning, Amy.
Hey guys, good morning. Well, as you were just talking about, huge success for the Korda sisters in 2021, and they're looking to pick up right where they left off this season. The sisters won the first two events of 2021, Jessica winning the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions, which then changed venues and moved here to Lake Nona, where her sister Nelly actually won the second event of the season, the Gainbridge LPGA. I know it's a lot to keep track of, but the change in venue actually gave Jessica the perfect excuse to defer all pressure to her younger sister, Nelly.
I told my sister she's defending this week. I was like, this is where you won. I think I played fine here last time. So hopefully with kind of my learning experience from then, I can do something with it this week. But like I said, it's the first week of the year, first tournament of the year. It's kind of a free-for-all, so we'll see.
As Nelly makes her debut here this week, she's looking to build on the success that she found last season, winning four times, one of those wins coming here at Lake Nona, capturing gold at the Olympic Games and ascending to number one in the world rankings. And it's a spot that she's now held more than any other American since the Rolex rankings were established back in 2006, holding the number one spot for 28 weeks now, passing the record previously held by Stacey Lewis with 26 weeks.
All right, Amy in Lake Nona as Jessica Korda gets ready to tee off 9:31 a.m. Eastern time. And I loved your athlete comp and golfer comp earlier this week and saying that maybe being alongside her little sister maybe have a Marco Mira type effect looking at Tiger Woods.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Jessica Korda does this year. We talk so much about Nelly, as we should. I mean, what Nelly did last year was remarkable stuff. You heard Amy Rogers mention the longest run, number one in the world for an American since the Rolex rankings have
amazing.
Been, you know, introduced. And, I mean, that is serious, serious stuff. For Jessica Korda now, it's looking internally and trying to find a way to step up to the plate. Maybe you can't get to where Nelly is. Maybe Nelly is unattainable. But you can get close. And that was what I was thinking about with Marco Mira in 98 was he was never going to be Tiger Woods, but he could try to be Tiger Woods for a couple of weeks. And those 2 weeks happen to be major championship weeks.
We watch these siblings perform at the same time, whether it's Venus and Serena competing against each other. You know, Eli Manning and Peyton Manning, you know, each retiring with two Super Bowl titles, and kind of the complexities of the relationships maybe, but also the love that they have for each other, the competitiveness. And I found it interesting at the end of last year in October at the Founders Cup, Jessica talked about how motivating it was to her to have Nelly, her little sister, as the best player in the world.
Nelly's definitely pushed me to be better, yeah, for sure, in everything. Not only do I find like slight inspiration in her, obviously, but I also don't want to get my butt kicked too much, you know. So I try to always keep it as competitive as I can. But she's revived my career. We've always said that.
She has revived my career. I mean, how about that? It's very, very strong from a player who, you know, 5-10 years ago was saying, you know, I'm good. Wait till my little sister gets out here. Well, it's not that Jessica now just wants to be the chaperone all the time. She wants to accomplish big things in this game as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously has the game to do it. Yeah. Mentioned what she did at this event last year, shooting 60, you know, second best round in the history of the LPGA Tour, tying other players. But, you know, I think about the Curry brothers, and I think about Nelly kind of being Steph, if you will, here. Obviously kind of switching the age to Seth, but Steph Curry has become, if not the best player in basketball, one of the best players in basketball. And we all know and follow Steph Curry, but what Seth has done in terms of pushing himself to get better and improves, having career numbers this season, averaging 15 points a game, goes under the radar with what he's able to do. And I can only imagine his brother pushes him to be better. Yeah. Even if Steph isn't around, even if Steph is in another state or completely or across the country, you see what he does and you see headlines and you see everything on House of Highlights and you see everything on social media and you want to be that as well. And for Jess, it's looking at your younger sister and going, I know she has more talent. I know she can go out there and do things that maybe I can't do, but at times I can play as good as anybody in the world. And for Jess Korda, it's tightened things up. And I think having Nelly close is a benefit. What a benefit that is to see the best golfer in your profession next to you at all times, traveling with you, talking about the game. How do you not pick things from that?
Keep your competitors close. Keep your sister closer. The philosophy of Jessica. Interesting to me, Shane, she had 5 top 10s in 7 major starts over 2018 and 19. Her sister was already a pro, but she was a teenager finding her way. No top 10 since in major championships as Nelly has been ascendant. What does that tell you?
Well, I mean, it tells you that majors are hard, first of all.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we could take from this that Nelly shows up, and Nelly's one player.
Yeah.
I mean, majors are tough, and players can get beat up. I mean, we saw Nelly last year at the U.S. Women's Open, you know, kind of riding a high, coming into Olympic Club, and all of a sudden the U.S. Open goes, no.
Yeah.
We don't care if you're the number one ranked player in the world. Jessica Korda has major level game. She does, and she has level to play anywhere in any golf course. We've seen her play well in majors, and then we've seen her take a couple of years off. This will be a year, in my opinion, that Jessica shows back up in the big events and at least gets herself in contention. I'm not going to say she's going to win a major championship, but I do think that she understands what it takes to win majors now, because not just the way she's seen it and the way she's played it, but because Nelly's gone out there and actually done it. And you can pick the brain of Nelly. Nelly, what was going through your mind on the second nine there in Atlanta? That's so important to be able to do and to get honest feedback in that world.
All this Sunday on NBC, Matt Stafford, OBJ, Cooper Kupp, Tyler Higbee, the LA Rams travel to Tampa to clash with Tom Brady and company, defending Super Bowl champ Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Coverage 2 p.m., kickoff at 3 p.m. Eastern time on NBC, Peacock, and Universal.
We got football. I got to do one more. Football. There's 4 games.
So 4 big games.
Four of them. You got Bengals, Titans, 49ers, Pack. Rams, Bucks, and we got Bills, Chiefs. What more could you want? It is going to be a football-heavy weekend. And if you know anything about football, you've heard the name Kevin Clark, does an unbelievable job for the Ringer. And this with Eli Manning on Slow News Day.
You tweeted something the other day. This is important. It's your son, Charlie, making the Manning face, the Eli face. How long have you been aware of the Eli face? I'm sure you saw the memes when you were playing. And now Charlie has it too. It's genetic?
It's genetic. It's like a Zoolander. I mean, he's doing the Magnum. He's perfected the face. I've been kind of doing it at him. I've been kind of giving the face to him.
See, of course,
he can copy me, but this was all natural. I'm like, say cheese, Charlie. And he just gives like the droppy kind of, you know, lower lip. Like just nothing is being thought. There's no emotion, no thought, no nothing going on in his whole expression, and I was like, that's it, you finally got it. I'm so proud of you.
And Kevin joins us now. And Kev, D-Hack and I've talked about this before. One of the strangest parts about having children is when you see yourself in your kids. It happens all the time.
It does. Scary when it happens.
It is very scary when you see it. Well, I want to get your hottest take on divisional weekend. What's your hottest NFL playoff take for this weekend?
Wow. I think, first of all, it's that Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes have the clearest path, and I didn't see this coming, to be the Manning and Brady of their generation. And we're going to see this. They're the two highest paid players in the NFL. That hasn't happened in a playoff game where the two highest paid players have played each other in a playoff game for over a decade. They are the first game in history where it's two guys coming off a 5-touchdown performance to play each other in a playoff game. This is history. And so I think we're going to start to see this, and it's going to be an every year thing. The Bills game plan their draft around beating the Chiefs. This is like they're in a little bit of a stare down here, and it starts for the second time on Sunday, and I think it's going to continue for the next decade, guys.
Great point, Kevin. How about the players having an extra regular season game coming off the super wild card weekend? How do you think this 17-game season worked out upon reflection?
It's a good thing for the Titans because they get the bye. Everybody else is banged up. And I think we're seeing that now. You're seeing Tristan Wirfs get hurt. You're seeing, I mean, the Bucs would have been a 2 seed in any other year. Instead, they're playing the Eagles. They're getting hurt. Brady's, you know, the kind of guy at 44 who needs to stay upright, especially against Aaron Donald and those guys coming to town this weekend. So I think that teams are managing it. I think you're going to see a little more schedule management, kind of like what you see in golf now, where maybe skill guys say, you know what, why do we need to play week 16, week 17, week 18? Maybe take one game off. You know, quarterbacks have been reluctant to do it. I've asked some quarterbacks about that, whether there's going to be some load management. They say no. It's going to be the positions where you see maybe the spotlight on less. You're going to see that going forward. I think teams are still adjusting to the extra game, but I think the kind of verdict is in, and it's that guys are more banged up than they should be.
Kev, you're a fairly recent adopter to golf, and you're all in. You're obsessed. You're in love. You think about it all the time. You're looking up tee times when you're traveling. What's been the easiest part about getting into golf, and what's been maybe the most surprising part about getting into golf?
The easiest part is the community. You know, you guys know this, but I moved from Los Angeles, where I took up golf, to New York last summer, and I found a golf community within about 5 minutes, and I think that's pretty universal now. And I took it up, obviously, a little before the pandemic, I think about 4 years ago. But I think a lot of people now are coming in and realizing how easy it is to find people to golf with, people in your life who already golf, and just connect with them. You know, my wife jokes about this all the time. Me and my friends don't plan for anything. We don't even get a dinner reservation ever, yet we'll find a tee time 8 days out. And we'll be up at 6 a.m. trying to find some tee time or whatever. And I'm going out this weekend with some friends in Orlando. It's a community that I've been amazed by, quite frankly. And you meet people, you connect with people. My move to New York was always going to be great, but the fact that I was able to find so many good golf courses and people to golf with, that was just incredible.
Speaking of great golf courses in the area, outside of playing golf with me and Shane at Baltusrol, which I know was a career highlight, what has been your favorite day on the golf course so far?
Wow. Winter Park 9. There we go. Winter Park 9, which I'm playing later today and tomorrow, actually. In Orlando is just a gem. It's not my hometown course because I don't live in Winter Park. My parents didn't grow up there. But it is so amazing to have a 20-buck round 20 minutes from your house and in that community. It's something really special. And I think, guys, it's a model for the rest of America. I mean, every community like Winter Park should have a Winter Park 9 if they have the land and they have the commitment for it and they have the appetite for it. I think most places do. So I love any day I can get out on Winter Park 9. Unfortunately, I figured out how to play Bethpage Black a lot. That is not a good thing. I wish I had never figured out that computer system. I get out there. And the good thing I always say about Bethpage Black is that everybody looks bad. So someone like me who's a high handicapper, it's fine because if you're playing with a 2, they're struggling too. So everybody's, you know, having a bad time. So we're all having a good time.
Does talking golf to NFL players help you with your job?
Yes. Yes. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, I sat down with Josh Allen in July, and the first thing I said was, you play any golf? And immediately he's telling me about Cypress. He played with Jim Nance. He's going hole by hole. Mahomes, same way. Mahomes had said something interesting, which was when he got to the NFL, he realized it was going to be free time, which is kind of counterintuitive. And he realized he needed something to put that energy into, and he got really into golf. He plays in Kansas City all the time. He goes to California. Justin Herbert is another golf sicko, quite frankly. He's out there playing all the time, driving up and down the coast of California, just finding places. But the thing that's really interesting is that Allen and Mahomes are friends. Allen yesterday called him a great dude and all that stuff. And I really think, and you see this with Herbert too, I wouldn't be surprised if golf is what brings them together. There's a network out there. Jim Nance has played with all of these guys. We had him on Sloan News Day to break that down. He does the little call and narrates your shot if you're Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes. But I really do think these guys are talking about golf all the time. When I talk to non-quarterbacks, they're talking about how the quarterbacks are always talking about golf. So it's not just, you know, everybody watching and their friends who are addicted to golf and figuring out tee times. NFL quarterbacks, too.
So on that note, when I was at SI, we tried to get players off campus, get them out of the team environment, you know, go to their house or hotel, golf course, restaurant. How hard or easy is that to do these days?
It's getting harder. It's getting harder. You know, I've only played golf with one NFL player, Mitchell Schwartz, my guy. He just built a simulator in his home. That's the difference between me and an NFL player. I don't get the simulator. But it's easy to get them out of their environment, I think, because they want to be. I think that these guys, especially modern quarterbacks, are so attached to their cell phone. Everyone's taking a camera phone picture of them all the time that I think the golf course can be a refuge for them. Obviously, the more exclusive the club, the easier it is for people to put their phones away. But I think it's there's always going to be that impulse for players to want to get away. And if you can get them on that track, they will oblige.
Kev, we had Bernhard Langer on the show yesterday, and I threw kind of an athlete comp his way, maybe a bit of a surprise athlete comp his way. Let's take a look. Golf's Tom Brady. You're never satisfied. You're always pushing yourself, and you're always looking ahead at the next season, the next tournament, the next victory. What are your thoughts on the Tom Brady comp?
Well, that's one of the greatest compliments I've ever gotten, because he's incredible. I mean, what Tom is doing out there, no matter which team he's playing for, you know, he's in the hunt for the Super Bowl, and that's incredible.
So that brought us to this moment, Kevin. I need some NFL, PGA, LPGA comps, if you've got any. I know you spent hours on end kind of researching this.
Up all night, pulled an all-nighter. Okay, so the Brady thing, I actually love the longer thing, but it's Tiger. And I know that's obvious, but Brady has more wins and passing yards in the playoffs than every other quarterback left combined. That includes Mahomes, and that includes Aaron Rodgers. Combine all of them, Tannehill, all these guys, Brady has more wins and passing yards. That's Tiger-esque. There's nobody else who's close. I would say, kind of downriver from that, Josh Allen to me is Bryson. You have a lot of, obviously, there's the physical strength, but there's also the improvement angle. I think if you'd gone back to 2017 and said this is where these guys would be, you'd be surprised. But their work ethic, and the fact that, by the way, anything can happen with either Josh Allen or Bryson. Anything can happen on any given play. You cannot turn away from either of those guys because you have no idea where it's going. John Rahm, to me, is Patrick Mahomes. Both of them obviously play a really high-level, consistent game, but also they've got a lot of strength. They've got a cannon, and they don't make mistakes with it. It's really hard to play an aggressive game and play mistake-free, and both of those guys do it.
All right, I got a couple.
Let's go, Dave.
I got John Rahm as King Derrick Henry, both overcoming injury or illness.
Powerful.
You see him coming, you want to get out of the way. Then I got DJ and Big Ben. DJ 6'4", Big Ben 6'5". Both have overcome struggles off the field or golf course. They both have hirsute kind of a chin, little hair on the chin. So I'm going Big Ben and DJ. What do you think of those comps?
I love that. Shane and I actually talked about Big Ben and DJ yesterday. I think that they're both – they also both have the same sort of personality, which is that they kind of can't be bothered, but they're very, very, very smart at their sport. And they also – the other thing about both those guys is they make it look easy because they're physical freaks, and it's not easy, and they work really hard. And so, yeah, I love that DJ Big Ben one.
Kev, I got one for you. How about Victor Hovland as Jonathan Taylor? They both have all the talent in the world, beloved by teammates, beloved by fans, by media. They might be the coolest person in the room, and we're just realizing they're both the coolest person in the room.
Do you think Jonathan Taylor is better around the greens?
He's working on it. He's admitted to such. Do you have any more before we let you go?
I do. So Rory is Aaron Rodgers. Easy. I mean, they both won a ton in the beginning of their career. They both probably should have won more. And personality wise, they're two of the most introspective guys in their sport.
Right.
And I think that there's a pretty one-to-one correlation between those guys. They're both beloved by the media. And I think that Colin Morikawa is like Joe Burrow. Neither of them have a cannon necessarily, but they do everything perfectly. They're both unflappable, and they're both going to win a ton going forward. A ton. If you were to take anybody's bank account for the next 20 years, you might want to go with Joe Burrow and Colin Morikawa.
So good. So
that's a really good one. That's my favorite one.
He stayed up all night. He came up with great stuff.
Kev Clark, we really appreciate the time. Can I just say one thing? And maybe D and I will do this for you. A Kindle. Maybe just a Kindle. You don't have to have all those books behind you. Just you can have one thing to hold all the books in a space they sell those now.
Work on it. I'm gonna work on it.
He's like a professor. Well, I like the look.
You can't put a Kindle. You can't put a Kindle on the back.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Room Raider wouldn't like the Kindle. Room Raider likes the books. Kevin, it's great to spend time with you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Coming up on Golf Today's second hour, got some Nelly Korda highlights. Follow the number one ranked player in the world. See how she's doing as the LPGA kicks off. Plus, Ricky Fowler in the field this week. The Amex open up the Fowler file to dive into Ricky, the good, the not so good, and the surprising stat that could be part of Ricky's problems last couple of seasons. And the great Tony Dungy going to join the program to talk playoff football, Mahomes and Josh Allen, and creating a winning culture in sport, not just football, but in sport.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Golf Today on a Thursday. Damon Hack alongside Shane Bacon. Busy time of the calendar. Imagine what Nelly Korda must be thinking about as she's playing golf today after a life-changing 2021. I imagine some butterflies and some excitement as well.
I was going to go excitement.
Yeah.
I think it's let's get back to the golf.
Yeah.
Let's get back to what I was doing last year. Let's show that I've improved. Let's show that I've buttoned up certain stuff, if that's even possible to do, considering the way she's driving the golf ball, considering the way she's hitting her irons, considering the way she's putting around these golf courses. 2021, a breakout season. But to me, it was a first step. 2021, to me, with Nelly Korda, isn't a live-alone type of year. I think this is going to be the first step in multiple seasons where you see a lot of wins and a lot of majors.
We were early adopters, not just of the Korda
sisters,
time
last
but year. The LPGA. We love talking about the LPGA. We have some highlights coming your way right now. The world number one on the golf course at Lake Mill. This is the par 5 second hole, her third from the rough.
Oh, golf ball. You're short of the green, okay? I've played that hole. That's not how you want to do it.
No.
Okay. Fourth.
So now we're four shot.
Okay.
There it is. There's the ball.
Into trouble.
Ooh.
All right. Still a little work left, we're going to say. Again, we ask for highlights and we get this stuff.
Not great. But it happened.
It did happen.
It's things that happen.
Our job is to tell the truth, show what happened.
You can listen to us talk on camera, yeah, or you could see golf that happened 20 minutes ago, even if it's a bogey or a double.
Fair enough. One over at this point. You can see the BPA. A lot of golf left today. A lot of golf left in 2022. No alarm bells, people. It'll be just fine.
Welcome back to our next segment. What's wrong with Nelly Korda?
You're right, sir.
Two holes down.
Oh, man. World number one on the golf course. We've also got some action
the other side of the country now. This is California. American Express PGA Tour out west this week. One of the headliners this week is Ricky Fowler. Looking to get off to a strong start in 2022. It's been a while.
Going to go out there with Mr. Phil Mickelson, by the way. I will guess there'll be some fans. That's my guess. There'll be some fans following that group. Your thoughts?
I think you're right.
I think they're going to be people.
Popular group. These guys know each other well, play money games. Let's hear what's on the mind of Ricky Fowler.
Looking to pick up where we left off, primarily with the CJ Cup. Obviously a great showing there. Felt like I had a tee to green. It was the best it's probably ever been. So if we can get the putter kind of close to where it's ever been, we'll be off and running. But I feel like that's something that's been trending and heading the right direction, as well as the last 6 to 8 months with the swing. And like I said, tee to green, driving's been a big part of that I felt like I drove it really well through the fall. Unfortunately, wasn't able to take advantage of a couple opportunities, especially the one at CJ. But no, I'm excited about this year. Yeah, a little different outlook having the little one and traveling with everyone and having to make the most of the time when I have it, be a little bit more efficient with practice, play, working out, all that, so I can still get some time with the family.
All right, we went into research.
Yep.
We looked through some of the books. We found the Fowler file, go through some of the career moments from Ricky Fowler, go back to 2012. You were at this event?
I was. Covering it for SI, big time. Duel, Ricky Fowler beating Rory McIlroy in DA points in a playoff to get his first win on the PGA Tour.
2014, you remember this, did not win a major championship, finished in the top five. At the time, it was Jack, it was Tiger, it was Ricky. That was it for players to finish in the top five in all four major championships. Since then, Jordan Spieth done it and Brooks Koepka.
And despite that great play, SI with this poll saying he was overrated. What was Ricky's reaction to the poll?
Fine by me. I'm going to try and play as well as I can this week, and I'm going to take care of my business.
If they're calling you overrated, does it mean something? Maybe we overrate wins?
I have no clue.
Is winning overrated is what I'm getting at. Is consistency not rated as highly as winning?
I guess top fives and four majors aren't that good, so one of three isn't that good. So like I said, I'll take care of my business, and I'll be just fine.
That was the look of a guy that knew what was coming, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That smirk on his face, gets to Sawgrass and just goes nuts at the end of the round. Birdie 13, birdie 15, eagled 16, birdie 17, birdies 18 deep.
Oh, Piers called him overrated. He said scoreboard. 2015 players with some exquisite shot making on one of the most mind-bending golf courses in Croatia, and he kept it going. In 2015, one of my favorite shots of that season, Scottish Open. How do you close out a tournament? Into about a foot and a half. Loved it. Dedicated the victory to his late coach, Barry McDonald, who's a third-generation Scotsman, by the way. And the good times continued to roll in 2015.
It was not done. Deutsche Bank Championship, that tap in to win. Handshakes with Henrik.
Yeah.
And you're kind of going, all right, Henry, now we're going. Now Ricky's on a run.
The young man was wide awake and ready to continue to play great. This was 2016. Waste Management Phoenix Open, a two-shot lead on Hideki with two to play.
Yeah, golf's mean. This was a perfect shot. He hit the perfect shot, and it went too far. What are you going to do? This was Ricky after.
The hard part is having, all my friends and family and grandpa and my dad who haven't seen me win. But I'll be able to kind of hang with them tonight. So I'll be all right. But with how good I'm playing, I know I can win. So that's the hard part.
Love the honesty. Love the emotion from Ricky, who had family there and wanted to win so badly. For them, he did win in 2017 at the Honda. He was over par. The final round was criticized for not, running through the tape. It was a four-shot win.
All you're trying to do is win.
Man.
You know what they do? They gave me the trophy at the end. That's all I can do. That's the 2019 Waste Management. Yeah. You see Skov on the bag with the fist pump. He knew how important this victory was to Ricky.
Making things right for Ricky. But what hasn't been right, the world golf ranking continues to go in the wrong direction.
Very interesting when you dive into who Ricky Fowler is right now as a golfer, and you see the ranking now 92nd in the world. And we live in a world, D, as you know, we talk about it so much. It's all about distance. Players trying to get longer. Bryson going through a body transformation to hit the ball longer and to become the longest player in professional golf. Ricky's numbers have gone the other way. I mean, Ricky's numbers have slipped in terms of being able to hit the ball far. And when you look at how the PGA Tour is right now, Colin Montgomery saying it feels very one-dimensional right now in terms of distance being key. When you're Ricky Fowler and your numbers are slipping, 2015, he was averaging about the same distance off the tee as he is in 2021 into 2022. This is a guy that was 39th on the PGA Tour in driving distance and now is near 100. When that's the case, something you think has to change. And then all of a sudden, now you're chasing distance, right? And when you start to change distance, some other stuff
can go away.
And he did chase distance, and he did work on his golf swing. And we, you know, we kind of say, yes, congrats to those who are able to change their golf swing or their bodies, Bryson DeChambeau, and continue to win and pick off huge events. Right. It doesn't always happen that way. And that's what's so fascinating about golf and Tiger changing his swing and other players going about how they go about their business differently. You know, Roger Federer has an Eastern grip with the forehand, and he hasn't changed it. Rafa Nadal has a semi-Western grip. Steph Curry isn't going to change how he goes about shooting his jump shots. Jamal Wilkes was unorthodox going around the back of the head. But golf, we see it all the time. And to know that you're going the wrong way, not just in the World Golf Ranking, but also in your driving distance, you're aware of it. You feel it when you're on the golf course. You see it in the stats. I mean, that's when you start chasing your tail and wondering, you know, how am I going to get back? It wasn't that long ago when he was winning big-time events and shutting up his peers who called him overrated and contending for major championships. He's not even contending for tournaments anymore.
Yeah, he was the young guy that was going to come on and challenge Rory McIlroy. It feels very Sergio Garcia-like. When you think about Sergio as the 19-year-old, the PGA Championship, he was going to be the guy that was going to face down Tiger. He was going to be the European Tour player that could beat Tiger Woods when Tiger was at his prime. And, of course, that never happened for Sergio Garcia. I mean, he wins his major championship late. And for Ricky Fowler, the first time we see him out there winning on the PGA Tour, who's he taking down? He's taking down Rory McIlroy. This is going to be the rivalry, right? Yeah. This is what we're going to see. Is it our fault that we talk Ricky both positively and negatively, right? Yeah. Because the resume is solid. Yeah. What he has done is solid. He's just missing a couple of things that you'd expect to be there, considering how good he was at a young age, considering what he did as an amateur golfer and early on in his professional career.
All we can do is ask the questions, study the tape, look at the tournaments. And I remember speaking to Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth about Ricky, but this is starting to feel like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago at the Players, and they were like, oh, this guy's going to win several major championships. I think if you ask that question now, they're still buddies. They want him to, but I don't know if their answer would be as affirmative as it was just 4 or 5 years ago. And that has to be hard when you've knocked on the door the way he did in 2014 and you're saying, yeah, I guess four majors of T5 or better is no good. And then all of a sudden, you know, that guy's not even there anymore, who was knocking on the door and, you know, trying to chase down Rory at Hoylake and was, you know, playing alongside some of the best players in the world in big high-profile spots. And you think about, like, you know, Patrick Reed and the pressure that Ricky actually put on him at the end of that tournament. Like, that guy, we have not seen him for quite some time.
There's a lot of stories that go deeper than who wins tournaments and who loses tournaments. I mean, I focus in on that 2016 Waste Management. He had a great shot. I mean, he steps up on the 17th tee knowing if I make birdie here, this is my tournament. And he rips it. It goes over the green. It goes in the water. And he loses. And you think about Rory McIlroy at the 2014 PGA battling Ricky Fowler. Mm. We showed the highlight yesterday, kind of necks that three wood on the 10th hole. He didn't hit it perfectly. Ricky hits that shot perfectly at the Waste Management. Rory kind of necks it. It rolls up to 10 feet. He makes eagle. And all of a sudden, he's leading this PGA championship that looks like it might go Ricky's way. Golf is tough. Winning is tough. We spend so much time here going, what's wrong with these players? When at times it literally is one bounce good or bad for players like Ricky. And currently, Ricky's getting the bad bounce.
And it's especially hard when you are on every other commercial.
Yes.
And now it's become the talking point. Well, there's Ricky. Well, where's he been? You know, and I told you, I mean, when we were in commercial, I said, you know, Ricky came up to me at the PGA and wanted to chat. And we were talking about his putting stroke. I said, it's the best I've ever seen, the best in the game. He says, I'm working hard. You know, I just need to see the ball go into the hole. But it's not like he's unaware of the talking points. We saw the sensitivity and the tears when he lost in Phoenix. We know that he heard the overrated talk and he turned that into victory. But it's got to be hard the longer he goes without, especially as he continues to be successful from an endorsement standpoint. And we see him, you know, week after week in commercials, but not week after week in contention.
2021 felt kind of like the slump buster season, right, for so many players. You think about Hideki, and you think about Brooke Henderson and Lydia, and, of course, Jordan Spieth. And we were kind of hoping it was going to be Ricky's as well. We were hoping that maybe Ricky late in the season would pick up that victory. And you mentioned the putting, talking about driving distance. I mean, Ricky Fowler was 126th on the PGA Tour last season in strokes gained putting. Ricky was the guy, and I've agreed with you every time you've brought this up.
Yeah.
Watching Ricky roll 8 footers. Was beautiful.
Beautiful.
It was artistic-like, right? I mean, you're seeing a guy, he'd have the line on his ball, and it would go end over end over end, and it would drop in with speed. And we stopped seeing a little bit of that from Ricky Fowler. And in times, when the golf game goes, it creeps into everything else.
100%.
You start to miss fairways, it puts pressure on your iron play. The iron play is not as sharp as it was. It puts pressure on the short game. Now you feel like you got to make every 8-footer, or you know you're going to shoot one or two over par. I'm sure Ricky has felt a little bit like that. We just know that internally inside of Ricky Fowler is a great ball striker and one of the best putters on the PGA Tour. And like Jordan Spieth last season, inch by inch, percentage point by percentage point, you get a little closer to that guy in 2014 and 2015, and all of a sudden you're in contention a couple of weeks in a row, and then it feels normal again.
Doesn't have to look very far to seeing some buddies turn around, and last year was the year of the comeback. But I tell you, listening to him talk to Steve Burkowski at Bay Hill last year, one of the great interviews of 2021, where he talked about taking his work home and getting into, you know, frustrating moments with his caddy or his wife and like not wanting to be that guy and how frustrating it is because he's trying to get out of this slump. And you know, I love the fact that he was just so honest about it. You know, we look at him as happy-go-lucky Ricky who used to ride the motorbikes and makes all these commercials. He's like, you know, darn it, I want to be a winner out here. And this is frustrating to me. And I think that maybe having that nadir moment where you're like, you know, doggone it, I have to turn this around and get better. And now he's a father and maybe the life perspective that hits some other athletes across time will hit him as well in a different way. And maybe he's not just playing for himself. He's playing for something larger.
You know, I lived in this world for a short amount of time, a long time ago, trying to play pro golf for a living.
Yeah.
And when you play bad golf, it you can't get the stink off. I mean, you really can't. Even when you try, when you're driving home from a golf tournament, you go, when I get home, it's over, you know, or you get home and you're still thinking about it and you go, I'll give it another hour. It's so hard to break out of that world. And for Ricky Fowler to say, it was so hard for me not to take this stuff home. I mean, this is his life.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, now he's got a different life and he's got a new life and a completely different life. But he will be professional golfer Ricky Fowler to 99.9% of the world. And he knows that's what he's going to be judged on. And it's uncomfortable when it's not going your way.
Yeah, I think it would be an incredible comeback story. You want to talk about a popular win?
I would love to see Ricky win again this year.
Gosh.
He's such an easy guy to root for.
Absolutely, in a comfortable place in the California desert this week. Well, folks, if you ever wanted to know what it's like to be inside the ropes with the PGA Tour's greatest players, don't have to wait much longer. The PGA Tour's new Netflix docu-series will give you unprecedented access to Mr. Chad Mumm. Join us next.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life.
We're back on Golf Today. Excited for this. A deep dive with unprecedented access inside the ropes of the season's biggest events is coming to Netflix in the form of a documentary series. Think Drive to Survive. With F1 last week, the PGA Tour formally introduced the series, which is currently in the process of filming. Some names that'll be included: Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa, a young player, D, that you may have heard of, Max Homa, also going to be included.
Is that with an H?
Yes.
Homa?
Yeah, yeah. Cal Berkeley, Max Homa.
He is. Can't believe I'm going to be on Netflix. L-O-L, what a great follow on social media. For more, we welcome to Chad Mumm, Vox Media Studios, head of entertainment. Chad, thank you for the time. A lot of us familiar with Netflix, maybe have a favorite show. How does something like this golf docuseries go from concept to reality?
This one's been a long time coming, guys. We started talking about this idea 3 years ago, almost to the day. I remember meeting with the PGA Tour team at CES out in Vegas. We played a round of golf. We talked about this idea on the first tee, that now is maybe the time to do this kind of authentic storytelling out on the PGA Tour. And like most things, you know, by the end of the round, we had hashed out a game plan, and that moment led to where we are now, announcing this series on Netflix, coming, you know, starting production now. We're out there with the guys, and we're really excited to get it going.
Yeah, Chad, I was listening to you on the Shotgun Start podcast. You mentioned Augusta National was the first major organization to say yes. So as a golf nut, a golf nerd, if you will, how long did you stare at that email?
I mean, I think the most surreal thing to me was getting on a Zoom call with Augusta National. You know, and you see, it's like, there's been a lot of cool moments in this show, but hopping on a Zoom, like from my house and seeing, like, you know, a person's name / Augusta National, that was pretty special.
So how many?
But yeah, they paved the way. So
yeah, how many players did you approach to participate in this initially? What was kind of your dream number?
I think, you know, obviously, once we got the tour on board, and they have been totally on board from the very beginning, I give them a ton of credit. They really understand for this to be what it needs to be. It has to be authentic. It has to be real, and, you know, and unfiltered. And so the tour really understood that, you know, at the highest level from the first, you know, minute we started talking about it. But then once that was done, we had to get the players on board. So we started having conversations. Ricky Fowler, who you were just talking about on the show, was the first player to say yes. And then followed shortly by Justin Thomas, Tony Finau, Cameron Champ. And then we had kind of our core group. And then we just started making the rounds. And I started going out and meeting with people, meeting with agents, and just getting people comfortable with this idea. A lot of the guys are fans of Drive to Survive. They've seen the show. You know, once Netflix came on board and once we brought our partners Box to Box on board, James K. Reese and Paul Martin's company who make Drive to Survive, you know, we just started picking up momentum. And I think we... You know, golf is obviously a different sport than Formula One. There's a much bigger field. There's a much bigger group of players. I think the kinds of stories you can tell in golf, you know, are vast, from superstars. We have five of the top seven players in the world to, you know, the number one amateur player in the world. And so, you know, I don't think we ever had like an ideal number. I think it was more like we wanted to have the right players to be able to tell sort of the full breadth of stories that you can tell in professional golf.
Well, you do have an incredible cast, but not everyone is going to say yes. Bryson DeChambeau has been a captivating figure, as you know, got some soap opera energy, big highs, big lows. What was that conversation with him, if any?
I mean, there'll always be a seat at the table at this show for Bryson anytime he wants to come aboard.
I like that. That's a professional answer. Chet, do the players understand the level of celebrity that's going to come with something like this? Because you have golf fans, and then you have people to watch Netflix, and no offense to golf, but that number is a lot wider. Do they understand what's going to come when people tune in?
I hope so. I mean, I think they've seen what happened with the drivers on Drive to Survive, and you know, some of those players have relationships with some of those drivers. So I know some phone calls were made to some of the drivers and some of the you know, the team leads in Formula One, and you know, just to kind of ask what it was like and what it did for them. And you know, obviously they liked what they heard because they all, you know, turned around and jumped in on this thing. I think they get it. I mean, I think our opportunity here, we really want to show golf, you know, for really what it is. I mean, I want the players to watch this when it's over and say, like, you got it right. Like, that's what it's really like, you know, for the first time. That's really, that was it. You guys nailed it. And you know, on the other end, it's like, this show isn't necessarily just for golf fans. We want to make it for, you know, people who love great stories. And I think Drive to Survive has been really successful at expanding that audience. I mean, the goal is to make an amazingly compelling show that feels great, that feels authentic, that feels true. And we think that can be an audience that, you know, goes even far beyond what, you know, the folks that tune into, you know, a Thursday round or just maybe watch the Masters or the Majors. So we think it's a great opportunity. And we really want to, you know, from the first frame, really want to subvert people's expectations about what, when they think pro golf, especially for that non-golf audience, you know, we really want to subvert those expectations, you know, early in the show, show them something they weren't expecting.
I love that quote. You said the same thing on the shotgun start. So what do you mean you want to subvert the idea of pro golf in the first 5 minutes of the show is what you said. What does that mean? Is it going to be explosions? Is it going to be fights? I mean, what did you mean by that?
I just think there's a perception of golf out there in the wider sports world, you know, of what, you know, maybe they're thinking about golf 20 years ago, you know, baggy shirts and, you know, guys that were playing on the tour. And again, I grew up watching those guys and that's what got me into golf. But, you know, these players, they're cool. You know, they're actually cool. They're cool people. They have interesting lives. They all have a very interesting perspective on what they do for a living. I heard recently it's a way to make it easy living playing pro golf. And I think that, you know, this show can really get into that. And it's, you know, it'll be on the course, inside the ropes, but also off the course, and you know, how they live their lives. And I was shocked just in our first conversations with players. I mean, really how different they all look at it. I mean, they all have their own point of view on how they approach the game, how they, you know, and golf is sort of the ultimate meritocracy in sports. You know, you pay your own way. There's no guaranteed contracts. You know, you miss the cut, you're slamming that trunk and you know, but you still paid for your travel, your team's travel. It's a really different universe. And we often say, you know, sports is the ultimate meritocracy, sports is the ultimate kind of microcosm of life. You know, sometimes life isn't a team sport. So we think that's going to be really interesting to see.
Chad, I was totally one of those people that watched Drive to Survive. My wife and I watched it, and then we started to watch F1 racing. So how do you get people to watch this series and fall in love with professional golf as well? Because you can watch this show
But how do you get people to tune into Riviera on a Sunday?
I mean, I think, you know, our goal is just to get people to watch the show and really fall in love with the characters. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the show will be successful if we can really show these, you know, players and these athletes like as who they are. And they all have amazing and really different personalities and really different approaches to the game and to their lives. And, you know, it's ultimately like it's a character story. And you know, we want to bring some of that character to pro golf. And, you know, sometimes you can't really tell when you're watching guys hit shots on TV, you know, who they are and what they struggle with and you know, what their goals are and like that deep stuff. And there's fun, there's drama, you know, all of it. And I also think pro golf kind of lends itself, you know, there's so many small things in golf that become such big stories, you know, and like it could be, you know, a spike mark or slow play or whatever. There's just these little details that I think people don't see and don't understand. And it just has huge impact, you know, throughout the whole year. And as you know, golf's not even a game of inches. I mean, it's a game of like fractions of an inch. And so, you know, the frustration that comes with like how to be that precise and that dialed in to deliver the biggest moments and what it takes to get to that place. You know, I find that super compelling. And I think that, you know, our audience will too.
Chad, just an idea. I think you should have an entire episode dedicated to the Max Homa guy you guys have on the show. And tie just a whole Max Homa episode, if you're okay with that. Nobody else on it. Is that okay?
I think Max could easily carry an episode.
There you go. See, I know he could.
Chad, we're excited looking at golf from a different perspective. Cannot wait. Thank you so much for the time and best of luck. Oh, this Sunday on NBC, Matthew Stafford and the Rams travel to Tampa to clash with Tom Brady and the defending Super Bowl champ Bucks. Coverage begins 2 p.m. Eastern, kickoff at 3 p.m. on NBC, Peacock, and Universal.
It'll be a big week in the world of the NFL. Bengals, Titans, 49ers, Packers on Saturday, Rams, Bucks, Bills, Chiefs on Sunday. If you like sport, this is one of the best weekends of the year. Tony Dungy will be involved and joins us now. And Tony, I want to start with this. What's the biggest difference from teams in the regular season to playoff football? What's the biggest difference in the way they prep, practice, walkthroughs when you really dive into a team?
You know, all of that really remains the same, but what happens is some teams can keep their rhythm and do what they do when the stakes get really high. And that's what happens. The stakes get elevated. So I always used to tell my teams, you don't have to elevate your play. What can't happen is we can't have a drop because you're feeling the pressure of the moment.
Coach, Chris Sims, our colleague, said there are no truly dominant teams this season. Bit of a mixed bag. What is your assessment of the teams that are left?
I agree with Chris. Every night on Football Night in America, every Sunday, they ask us, well, who's the favorite now? Who are you picking to go to the Super Bowl? And I honestly can't say, well, this team really looks like the favorite. Everybody's got flaws. Everybody has hot and cold performances. If you just judge off last week, the Buffalo Bills, you say, who can stop them? But then you go a couple of weeks before that, and they had some struggling off kilter performances. So I don't know where we're going to be. I'm excited. And the other thing is injuries. I live down here in Tampa, and all they're talking about on this Bucs team is, gosh, our offensive linemen are hurt. Our defensive backs are hurt. Richard Sherman's on IR. Who's going to be covering these receivers? Who's going to block Aaron Donald? So a lot of it is health, and a lot of it is, you know, really not having that even level performance all year.
Tony, you mentioned the Bills, and we get Josh Allen versus Patrick Mahomes this weekend. This is what sports fans dream of. Brady Manning, Breeze Rodgers. How special is it to get these two young quarterbacks with different skill sets going at it in the playoffs?
I think it's going to be unbelievable on this stage. As you mentioned, some of those great rivalries we've had, you know, Steve Young and Troy Aikman going head-to-head in a big moment in the playoffs. That's what people are going to remember, and I think this is going to be maybe the second of many, many of those battles between Mahomes and Allen that are going to be memorable.
All right, Coach, we're going to the way back machine now. 1997, I covered the 49ers-Bucks season opener for the Sacramento Bee. You guys wore the Niners out. I thought that was a pivot point in changing the culture of the Bucks. How does someone, a golfer, a coach, a team, change the culture from one of malaise to one of winning?
It really was that signature moment for us. I got there in 1996, and we did some good things, but it had been 14 years since we'd been in the playoffs. We really hadn't had a marquee win. Now we're playing the 49ers opening day, and they've got Steve Young and Jerry Rice and Bryant Young, and they've got all of these stars. And our crowd is hoping that we'll play well, but really not expecting us to win. And our defense went out there and held the 49ers without a touchdown. Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, that was the beginning of just some great play by that defensive unit. And that changed our attitude about ourselves that day. I think that changed our fans' attitude. We started selling out. The new stadium that you saw was built the next year. So a lot of things happened after that 49er victory.
Tony, do you have any hot takes going into this weekend? Both one seeds lose. We don't see Tom Brady advance. Are you going to dive deep into the hot take machine here?
I don't really know what's going to happen, but I do feel this way. I think pass rush is going to be critical. These quarterbacks are so good. These receivers are so good. I think it's the teams that can rush the passer well that are going to come out of it. In our game, Tampa and the Rams, for instance, I am really looking forward to seeing which side of the ball, whether it's Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett and Ndamukong Suh with the Bucs, or it's the other side with Aaron Donald, and now they've acquired Von Miller. Which defensive line can take control of the game? I think that's who's going to advance and go on in this round.
Coach, Tom Brady, you've game-planned against him. How? How is this happening? How is he continuing to play football at this age, 44, at maybe the highest level that we've seen? How is this happening?
It is really amazing. You mentioned going way back. Well, my Super Bowl win was 2006, 15 seasons ago. I've been retired for 12 years broadcasting for NBC. Tom Brady is still playing, and he's playing better than he played in 2006. It's really incredible. Bruce Arians, I know him well. Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator at Tampa, they've set up a really, really good system. They've got some dynamic playmakers. But Tom Brady is driven. He wants to show the world just how good he is. I don't see any signs of him slowing down, thinking about retirement. I would see him trying to win this year and then trying to come back and win three in a row.
Nothing is out of the realm of possibility for Tom Brady. Coach, I know how much you love being in Tampa. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks for a few minutes. We'll speak to you soon.
Great to be with you guys. Keep up all the great work.